Do you want to feel happier? Do you want to feel more radiant and more alive? Or to go beyond alive and truly feel like you are thriving? That's what I'm here for. Helping you find that best you that you know is in there. It is. And you can start accessing that you today. It's possible. If you're ready for a shortcut to just that, let's work together. Reach out and let's work one-on-one to transform you and your life into happy, into thriving. Reach out to me and book a quick call. It's in the show notes, and let's get you there. Are you really committed and ready? Then let's do it. Personally, I'm the happiest I've ever been thanks to all the practices that I've made a part of my life. You can be too. It is here for you, I promise. You can also access my course, The Youthfulness Hack, which is all about feeling good and getting radiant and all the things I do concentrated in one spot. Go there today and use code AMY15 for 15% off right now, only for listeners of this show. And if you are truly ready to have accountability and live happy, book a call with me today. The world needs your best. You deserve your best. Hello, and welcome to the Amy Edwards Show. I'm your host, Amy Edwards, and I'm so excited to be rolling in my new studio. It's in Prague, in progress. If you can tell, I'm sitting in the cosmos right now, getting my background up, getting everything up, and I'm so excited to just keep bringing you even better shows all the time. And I'm super stoked about today's guest, Kaylor Betts. Welcome, Kaylor. I'm so excited. We've already gotten to know each other when I was on your show, and I'm so happy to welcome you here and continue the conversation, because you are a very philosophical person and I enjoy talking to you because you love a good banter. Would that be accurate in saying?
Oh yeah, I definitely put the bant in banter for sure. And Amy, you look like you're in the cosmos right now. So that's pretty cool.
I'm floating in the cosmos. It's part of my brand. You are the anti-woke life and business coach. You are the host of the Awake and Winning podcast, and you're helping awake humans win in body, mind, home, and business. And I think it's interesting to have some of those words in what you're all about, because they're not exactly subjective. So I think it's interesting to talk about they're not exactly objective, excuse me. They're more subjective. So what does it mean to be awake for you? And what does anti-woke even mean to you? And what does winning mean to you? And I know those are three big questions, but start wherever you want.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think being awake is ultimately being aware of the lies that we're being sold, okay? Now, you're totally right. That is subjective. These are based on opinion, right? This is my opinion, because if you look at people who are, let's say, quote unquote, woke, which is really interesting, this like dichotomy between woke and awake. Some people are like, isn't that the same thing, right? There's a kind of a big story behind that. We can get into it. But essentially, if you're woke, you also believe that we're being sold lies. You just have a completely and entirely different opinion of what those lies are, right? So I think that awake is being aware of the lies that we're being sold through primarily a few different realms. So number one, government, the school system, the Western clinical establishment, the pharmaceutical world, media, corporations, you know, and even like if you look at Hollywood, for example, and I'm not saying, you know, I don't hate everyone that works in government or the school system or Hollywood or anything. It's just, I think there's a narrative in those realms, right? So for example, in Hollywood, there's kind of the narrative, and I would call that woke. And the narrative is essentially what I view as to be some lies. And I actually talk about how these lies, to say it very bluntly, about how these lies often make us fat, sick, tired, weak, and broke, okay? Mm-hmm. So I think that a lot of people are indoctrinated into those lies. It's kind of the mainstream narrative, you could call it. When you look at media, for example, the media is very much, not all, because we have like, you know, independent media, we have like Fox News versus CNN, and those two, you know, they're on completely different wavelengths, and they have different ideological perspectives that they push and worldviews. but the mainstream media primarily would be more woke as opposed to awake, is just very counter to that narrative that seemingly gets pushed out there. I'm going to pause there because, like, man, there's so much we could get into there. Hopefully that makes sense, but that's what I would say awake is.
Yeah. And almost you could see it as like lumping everything into following a narrative, you know, like all those big corporations, you know, they've got their agenda basically. And it might just be more searching for a bigger truth rather than, and understanding like those are all, they all got an agenda. You know what I mean? Like no matter what end of the spectrum they're falling on, I think.
Well, yeah. You mentioned big corporations. Like, I mean, I suppose there's always exceptions, but in large part, these corporations, I mean, I see them just really doing at the end of the day what is going to get them, you know, their shareholders making the most amount of money, which, you know, hey,
that
look,
money, honey, right?
At the end of the day, I can't even really hate on that too much. Look, I'm a capitalist at heart. But there's also, in, I mean, look, if I was running a big company, I get it. I get what it's like to run a very small company. And even then, I mean, at the end of the day, this is your life. I mean, like you're bound to, you have a lot of responsibilities to, you know, financially compensate your team and make sure there's enough money at the end of the day, or otherwise you could go out of business. And like, it's, I get it. And I want to have empathy to some of these people, and that I don't really think, even if we look at the pharmaceutical industry, I think that there, the amount of corruption and greed and I just think it's been an atrocity what a lot of the pharmaceutical mm-hmm. world has done. I also think that they do some good things, and that obviously we need some of their, like, antibiotics. Like I will pray to baby Jesus all the time that we have antibiotics, because I'd probably be dead if we didn't have antibiotics. I've had infections where I need antibiotics, and pharmaceutical companies provide those antibiotics. So I'm not going to sit here and I'm not going to criticize everything they do, but there's also the opioid crisis. There's also what we just went through for the last 3 years in COVID, and basically coercing people and lobbying to governments and getting corporations on board. And like, they made more money than they've ever made. Like, there's good and bad, but I think there's been a lot of bad. I think there's been a lot of evil. But I will even say that, like, in their defense, I genuinely think that, and some awake people are not going to like this, but I genuinely think that they're just business people. And they're just, for the most part, they're playing within the rules, although they do have a budget for getting sued. They've had the biggest criminal lawsuit in history because of, you know, some of the atrocities that their medications that they've sold and made a lot of money off of have achieved. But at the end of the day, I also just think they're just like, they got families, and they're just, they want to make money, and they want to make sure their shareholders are happy, because quite honestly, they've gotten into this hole where they have to. So that, in their defense, is I think what's going on. And then, yeah, the corporations, I mean, they're following the mainstream narrative. Like you see these corporations like doing pride parades or, you know, getting on the BLM train and stuff like that. I don't care what you think about those. My point is that they don't really care about those. They would do a parade for anything. They'd do a parade for squirrels if it made them more money at the end of the day. That's my belief.
Someone yeah, that's can push just back following.
On that, but that's my belief.
Well, no, but that totally makes sense that they're just following the, like, supposed to, oh, this is what you do now to please everyone, like, and to ultimately increase our bottom line, right? So they throw the parade or whatever it is, and there's no substance behind it. They're not backing up. They're not really caring about the people. You know, at the end of the day, they're caring about money. And you know, you said they're playing by the rules. Sorta, because they're actually making the rules a lot in our government by lobbying and, you know, putting a lot of money behind their own interests. So, you know, yeah, 100%. They're playing by the rules, but they're making the rules. And so we've just got a broken system, really. But anyway, all that aside.
And by the way, Amy, there's a term, remember your question, but there's a term for what you said earlier on. It's called virtue signaling. I'm sure you've heard it.
Yeah.
But there's nothing that drives me more mad. I mean, look, there's something called dignity and integrity. And I think that speaking of winning in life, I think you got to get really clear on what your values are, your principles are. You got to live by them like crazy, and you have to be in alignment. You got to live, you got to strive to live in that integrity and have dignity at the end of the day, so you can rest your head on your pillow at the end of the night and be very fulfilled with how you showed up into this world. And I quite frankly look at a lot of people in government, a lot of people in corporations, the pharmaceutical world, a lot of those people could actually care less at what they've decided and determined at the end of the day is their principles and their values. They actually just want to get validated or gain more money and power. I see a lot of that.
I don't know. I think maybe it's been a slippery slope and they make compromise, and then pretty much you end up confused on where those values even are anymore. You were trying to help people, you had to compromise, and then, you know, here you are years later and you're like, well, shit, you know,
you've
like,
dug yourself a hole is what you're saying.
You dug yourself a hole. And yeah. So, you know, that's the part that gets me though. If we're looking at the corporations, like you said, at the end of the day, they're just trying to feed their families. Probably, but I feel like if you were running a corporation, I mean, we entered this podcast and you cared how I thought. You cared about me. You cared about, you know, what my format is like. And, you know, you backed it up. And like that in itself says that, you know, how you're running your business is going to be a reflection of your values and how you treat people. Would that be correct in saying, you know? So
yes, I care about one thing and one thing only. Well, sorry.
Okay.
Well, no, you could, this is going to get philosophical because are going to have to define this word. When I say that I care about one thing, I'm going to say a word and then we could totally get into, but what is, you know, this word that I'm about to say, and it's truth. You know, at the end of the day, I care about truth. And some people will say, well, like, oh no, but love is more important. Yeah. But love is truth. Like truth to me
Agreed.
Is just a word
totally agreed.
That like, at the end of the day, there's always the truth. And then people will get too caught up in like objective truth, what science can prove. No, I mean, like whatever is truly going on, I think we should always be exploring truth. And I don't think we ever get there. I think that's actually the point of truth it's infinite. So we're always exploring.
Yes.
And really the path of exploring that truth is the beauty of life, right? So for me, it's like, I could have a conversation. You could be the wokest person ever. And I would love this conversation. Honestly, I would feed off it. I love getting curious. I believe in curious over cancel culture, curious culture over cancel culture. We want to write people off because they see the world in a completely different way. How about get curious about why does this person see the world the way that I don't see it? And what can I learn that maybe is even going to make me shift how I believe in and what I believe in and what I believe to be truth? That's a beautiful thing to me, right?
Oh, you're making my heart. I feel that. I believe that so much. And as you were talking in the beginning about lies, I was thinking about, oh, well, but we can flip that around and say, you know, where are we looking for the truth? Where are we truth seekers? And personally, I prefer to shift my mindset in that. It's like taking those words out of it, you know, and the power of what we say and the words and what we're drawing to us. And instead of saying like, you know, oh, I'm not going to lose, instead you say, I am going to win. And it's about, you know, just shifting that mental perspective a little bit. But anyway, that's just a side note of like what you were saying earlier.
Well, for sure, because there's a lot of people who are awake and they think that is winning. They think, oh, I'm aware of the lies. And again, everyone has a different idea of what the lies are. But I think that, and you know, the great, whatever the greater intelligence is out there, that's the only thing or entity that actually knows what the truth really is. But we're all on an exploration. But I've seen firsthand that I've been indoctrinated into those kind of lies, and I can give you examples if you want, but you know, I've been indoctrinated into those lies and it's led me to a place that truly actually made me very fat, sick, tired, weak, and broke. And if you look at it, I think there is a greater agenda, and you know, it gets complicated because who's behind that agenda? I mean, again, you list off the government, the corporations, the elites, like, yes, there's a lot of people who are behind that agenda. Or maybe very little. I don't know. I don't have all the answers. But I think there's clearly these lies that we're being sold and they want people to be indoctrinated into because, and again, this is where I might sound like I'm putting on my tinfoil hat, but I genuinely think it's because people at the top do want to have the leverage and control and power over the masses, because I think that It can get a little ugly when they lose that power and leverage. And I think that they want you to be weak in a way. And when I say they, people are going to ask, well, who is that? What are you talking about? I get that it's complicated, but I really do think that being awake to those is great. But then it's like, what do we do about it? Being awake to them is not enough. It's like, now if you're awake to that, look, there's a lot of people out there that think that the reason why they're not winning in life or don't have abundance or an extraordinary life is because of the current administration in the government. And that, my friends, is not winning. That's losing.
So it's kind of giving your power away in a lot of ways.
It's classic mm-hmm. victim mindset. It is pointing your finger and saying the reason for my shortcomings, flaws, insecurities, whatever it is all because of everything and everyone out there. And that is victim mentality. And what we help people is take their fucking power back and realize that they're in the driver's seat. And if they just realize that, no, your problem is that you think that the current administration or the corporations or the pharmaceutical companies or the WEF or the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, you think that's the reason why you're not winning. We're here to empower you to realize that you actually hold the keys. You just got to see it, right? And take action on it.
I literally have a tattoo of key right here on my wrist. And I was going through a hard time where I was really giving my power away. And I was like, I hold the key to all this. And I was like, I have to get a tattoo of it.
Well, and now I was have like, to get a tattoo of a
do
key.
Do it, do it. And I was going to get it across. And the guy was like, don't you want it like you're putting it in the door? Just this. I was like, yes.
That's cool.
And then it was one of the hardest heals I've ever had. It just kept, coming off. And I thought, you know what? That's representative of reclaiming your own power. Sometimes it's really tough. And I like that it's a messed up tattoo because it's just like kind of white in parts. And I'm like, that's good. That reminds me that, you know what, holding on to my own power and knowing I have the keys is a ongoing practice, and it can be not that pretty sometimes. It can be tough sometimes, and that's okay because we're still in power of ourselves. When did you realize that? What was like, so you were all these things, right? And so you, when we talked on your show, you were talking about, we talked a little bit about opposing views on self-love versus, you know, sort of, you know, being hard on yourself and what the hell are you doing?
You can say it, self-hate.
Self-hate, fuck you in the mirror. And so I am curious about, you know, that process for you and, you know, how you view it now too, like what you've learned and how you view it now.
Yeah, like I think I really realized it was an awakening for me that I think actually happened. I think there's numerous factors. I think sports, I have to give a lot of credit to, because look, I dropped out of I didn't drop out, sorry. I didn't graduate high school. I completed and I didn't graduate. You don't hear that often. But I was even at my grad, but I just wasn't on the slideshow of the people that graduate. I didn't go up and shake the hand and get my diploma or whatever.
Did you get an actual diploma or?
Eventually when I was, so what they do in Canada, at least up here, I don't know where they do it, but they give you like a graduated, it's called a GED. It's like a graduated diploma. If you aren't a complete degenerate and you can prove it, after like so many years, you can just get your high school diploma. I needed it for some like nutrition course I was taking or whatever, but no, I didn't get it the way you're supposed to. I was, I think, 3 credits short of what I needed. But either way, I didn't learn a whole lot from school. I got to be honest. What I really learned a lot from was sports, because sports are a really good, essentially analogy for life. You know, like that's where I learned how to get up when you fall down. That's where I learned how to focus. That's where I learned how to practice and work hard and practice perfectly. Like perfect practice makes, I forget what the saying is, but you know, practicing in the right way. I learned how to lose. I learned how to fail. I learned how to win properly. I learned how to communicate. I learned how to work with a team. I learned how to lead. I learned how to communicate because I had to have difficult conversations, and I learned how important those difficult conversations were. And I think ultimately what sports taught me, because my coaches were very, they were like hard on me, but they were also very supportive, is they just really, essentially conditioned me to really understand that, like, I am in control. Like, that's what a good coach will do, is it's like, hey, we focus on what we can control, and you got to surrender to the things in which aren't in your control. And I think that's the fundamental principle of stoicism. And I think that's just really what it taught me, is it's like, hey, there's no handouts here. And now this is where my ideological perspective comes from, is I'm a personal responsibility guy. Right. So I think that's what sports ultimately taught me, is like, hey, you want to, the sky's the limit. You know, you can achieve anything, because that's what my coaches really told me, but you got to go out and work for it. You can't be in victim mode. You can't make excuses. You got to show up and do the work. You got to have difficult conversations. And ultimately, if you are willing to go through the adversity and the challenges and the failure that inevitably come with that, you can have abundance. And I think after sports, that's just what I took into my life, and it served me very well.
Well, so what happened though, when you found yourself like having, you know, fallen to the, you know, sick, fat, tired, weak,
weak and broke,
broke, you know,
well, what happened? I slipped back into victim mode. And really what I did was I found unhealthy coping mechanisms, right? So those were great for a little bit.
What were you coping with?
I was coping with a lot of things, deep insecurity and feelings of inadequacy. I mean, look, I believe fundamentally that if we want to look at just like the internal beliefs and the subconscious stuff that's going on that we all have. I mean, it's a very complex, nuanced conversation, but I think fundamentally, all of us to a certain degree have feelings of not enoughness. Now, someone might say, no, I have no feelings of not enoughness. I'm like, I think if you dig deep enough, we all do. And really what's underneath there, and the real deeper fear, is a fear of not being loved enough. Okay. So I think that the fear is when you have a narrative that's going on in your psychology that maybe states, for example, I'm not pretty enough. Okay. Let's say that's like the narrative, or I'm not skinny enough, or I'm not smart enough, or I'm not significant enough, whatever it is. I'm not tall enough.
Got all this, except the tall part. All this.
There you go.
I can check all the boxes.
There you go. We have these narratives, but on a deeper level, what really is the fear is, again, a fear of not being loved. So I think that's just what I had. I, like you just said, I checked off all those boxes as well too. And those were just on repeat in my psychology all day long. And what I did to cope with that pain, there's kind of a few ways you can. There's a couple ways. One way is to actually, it's through behavior. So for example, this is where people pleasing comes from, right? So it's the belief of like, okay, if I feel like I'm not smart enough or significant enough, my deeper fear is not being loved. So what I'm going to do to cope with that is I'm just going to try and please everything and everyone around me. And then maybe I'll get the love, care, and attention. And then maybe I'll feel like I'm enough, right?
Right.
So that's where people pleasing comes from. It also
well
could-
said, good job.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I've done a lot of internal reflection.
Clearly.
But then also there's overachievement. People go out and they're workaholics, and it comes from that place, because maybe if I go out and I make enough money and I get enough credentials or build a big enough business, then maybe I'll feel significant enough, or, and then I'll feel like I get love, care, and attention. But then it's interesting, because then there's also like underachiever. I don't know if you know some underachievers, but there's some people who purposely stay small because they want to be convenient for the people around them. They don't want to overshadow. They don't want people to be jealous. So they stay small. Like, there's a lot of behavioral stuff you can do. And I did those things. I was an overachiever and a people pleaser. But the other way in which you can cope with that deep internal pain and feelings of not enoughness is coping mechanisms. So tools. And like, if you're going to ask me what tools, I mean, name it, I probably did it. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I mean, it was like everything from hard drugs to alcohol to weed to porn and sex to gambling was never really a big one for me. That might be the only one that didn't show up. But even like, you know, Netflix, you know, smoking, nicotine, like anything that would disconnect me from self. Because that's really what a coping mechanism does, is it makes you escape from self and get out here. And what it does is it delays the anxiety, the depression, the feelings of not enoughness for a little bit, and then it amplifies it. Mm-hmm. So I did that. You asked me what happened. I did that for long enough and then it all came crashing down. And I'm like, I've been overworking, people pleasing, sex, drugs, and rock and roll forever, for felt like forever. It was quite a few years. And like, I'm not getting the macro result. Sure, it feels okay in the moment and it delays everything that I have, pain, all the pain that I have, but it's destroying my life. And one day I just eventually woke up and I said, you know what? I got to choose my heart here. It's going to be hard if I continue to go down this path, even though I have these coping mechanisms, or I can choose to just like get the fuck up, stop doing dumb shit, stop being a degenerate. I know some people don't like this language, but this is just like how I talk. I was like, it's going to be hard to do that, or it's also going to be hard to turn my life around and get it together, but I know I can do it. And I took the keys. That's why now I got to get a tattoo of a key. I like that idea, if you don't mind.
Yes, good.
And I took my goddamn keys and I started reading Tony Robbins, Jim Rohn, Bob Proctor, like all the OGs. And then I got into Dr. Joe Dispenza before a lot of people knew who he was. Like, and I really started to, and it wasn't a smooth ride. It was up and down, up and down, up and down. But I kept going up and I kept getting up. And sooner or later, after I got obsessed, I went on a relentless journey. And now truly for quite a few years now, I've been to a place I never thought I would get to. I am the high school dropout that my parents were extremely worried about. I have a sister. They weren't worried about her for a second. They were worried about me. And I was the one that was causing everyone stress. And now, you know, in a way, not to brag, but I'm a little bit of a maybe the rock now. And I'm the kind of the guy who has his ducks in a row and who has a lot of things figured out. I got a lot to learn, but I'm very proud of where I've gotten to.
Are you ready to up-level your pleasure practice? I have in mind, and the main things that have helped me are the tools that I've found from Wands. Wands creates luxurious products that encourage us all to honor our body, celebrate our sexuality, and live in pleasure, with more pleasure all the time. One of my favorites, if you listen to this show, then you probably already know, is the Cervix Wand. Wands has trademarked their number one best-selling glass pleasure wand. It's for vaginal and anal de-armoring, and it's designed for cervical and G-spot stimulation. And let me tell you, it's incredible. It's helped thousands of women become more connected to their bodies and their pleasure, and supports them to heal pelvic pain through self-yoni massage and helps awaken more pleasure. Just recently, I've ordered the Venus Wand, another trademarked wand from Wands, and it's designed to activate and awaken the G-spot and more. Also, don't miss one of their new offerings, which are free bleed blankets that can be used as waterproof intimacy blankets. They have a beautiful selection now available. But take a look around at wands.com, that's W-A-A-N-D-S, because they have a huge selection of incredible items like yoni eggs, crystal pleasure wands in amethyst, black obsidian, anything that your heart desires, and so much more. Check them out at wands.com. That's W-A-A-N-D-S.com. And use my link in the show notes to get 10% off, or simply enter my code, Amy Edwards, at checkout. Again, that's W-A-A-N-D-S, wands.com. Y'all, I have started using higher dose products, and I am such a fan. You know, I don't put anything on this podcast that I am not 100% completely behind. And I have a special discount code for you for all higher dose products. I'm so excited. If you don't know, Higher Dose is a wellness company. They have wellness tech products, they have tools, they have supplements, and they have body care. They have so many things that are hot right now too, that are really biohacking and up-leveling our lives at home, which is really cool. They have an infrared sauna blanket. They have an infrared PEMF mat that I'm so excited to be sharing about soon. One of my favorites though is the red light face mask. It stimulates collagen, it activates glowing skin, reduces fine lines, regenerates cells, and it's soft. It's not like one of the hard plastic ones. So you can kind of move it around on your body, which I've been doing. And I am seeing amazing results. I am absolutely addicted to it. I use it every single night. And I'm using it in conjunction with one of their other products, the Glow Serum. And I'm very picky about what I put on my skin. And I am loving the Glow Serum. It's specially formulated to plump and hydrate and stimulate radiant skin, which that's the goal. They have a ton of other products too. Magnesium ingestibles, magnesium body care, which has a healing oil and a serotonin soap that you can use in your bath, which I've been using too. It boosts your mood, enhances your skin, and deepens your detox, gets you calmed down. Anyway, I'm a fan, so I'm so excited to offer you 15% off using my code MAGIC15. Go to the show notes. You can click through on the link right there. Or if you go to Higher Dose, just enter the code MAGIC15 and you'll get 15% off. Higher Dose has been featured in Goop, Glamour, Elle, Vogue, Bazaar, Allure, basically you name it. And there's a reason why. So go check it out. It's at higherdose.com and enter my code MAGIC15 for 15% off.
Are you grateful for what you went through now because you know that it gives you more perspective to help others?
Oh, like I am so one thing that comes to mind when you say that, the short answer is yes, but I got to expand. Me and my dad have a very complicated relationship. We don't have that like father-son bond that I've always yearned for. And I love my dad, but you know, there was a time where I'm like, do I even want to have a relationship with him? Because he was very hard on me. And I think a lot of my insecurities came from my caregiver, my father. And he was very, very hard. And he has his own, you know, internal battles he's dealing with, but I was very resentful because of that. And there was a time where I'm like, so angry, so resentful, whatever. And instead of forgiving him, I'm not a big forgiveness guy. And I know a lot of people are. But let me expand, because I know a lot of people are like, what you know, I get why we forgive. But I think what that does is it not only sets the precedent that what they did is justified in just in our, depending on your definition of forgiveness, but I just couldn't get past that. I also felt like it kind of created this hierarchy of like, if as soon as I forgive someone, I'm up here and I'm pointing my finger down to them and saying, you've done everything wrong, I forgive you. It just didn't serve me. So what I focused on was acceptance. Ooh,
it's almost like shifting it into a victim, you know, yes. Like, yes. Yeah, like you yes. Treated me bad and exactly. I'm above you. And I, you know, like this weird.
Exactly. Yeah. So what I switched it to was acceptance. So I've yeah. Accepted that, look, my dad wasn't perfect. He's a human. No dad is. But you know what? He was the perfect dad for me, because I wouldn't fucking be here obsessed yeah. With personal growth and healing and helping others do it. And I wouldn't have the story I have. I literally wouldn't be talking to you right now, which I'm so passionate about. This is my favorite thing to do, is have these kind of conversations. I would not be doing that if it wasn't for my dad. So he wasn't the perfect dad. He was the perfect dad for me.
Right? I love that. That, I mean, that is the shift of forgiveness. It's this acceptance of like, that is what happened. And here I am today, this strong person holding these keys, you know, like I think forgiveness gets confusing for people because they think they have to, I don't know. Defining it is confusing for me, but I like viewing it as a part of acceptance of this experience that I'm having right now.
It's a human experience. Like,
it's a human experience.
Like my pain, you asked if I was grateful and I said the short answer was yes. Like I might even be more grateful for my pain. And we had a conversation on my podcast where I and we kind of didn't really see eye to eye, which is a beautiful thing. And we explored it, exploration of truth. But I think we didn't. But I basically said I'm not prioritizing happiness. We ended up finding out we have a different definition of happiness. Mm-hmm. But this is where the happiness thing comes from, is the reason why I don't really prioritize happiness. I love happiness. Who doesn't? When it comes, I embrace it. I honor it. And acknowledge it and live it. But I think that I'm probably, like, I weirdly have seen how valuable my pain has been, that when I go through pain, I can almost see it as I'm feeling it. I can almost already feel excited about, ooh, what is this here for? This is a test from the universe. And what am I gonna learn? How am I gonna grow? And what is going to be healed because of this pain? I can't wait to find out. Like, I know that sounds like, Kayla, you're just, there's no way you feel that.
Not to me.
I genuinely do.
Totally agree. I totally agree. Yeah. No, that, I think that that's it. That's it. You can see, you can feel, this is serving me. This is serving that person that I want to become, this better version of me that I'm constantly striving for, this expansion. It's serving my expansion. So
yes.
How can yes. I learn in this moment? How, and you know, like that's the thing. It's that bigger picture of expansion and understanding. And part of it, I think, is to that we get older and we're able to understand that we learn from those things rather than this was never going to end, you know, but we know it is, you know, it is going to end. I mean, like right now I have two teenagers and one of them's just entering that kind of like, you know, teenager thing. And the other one's come out of it. And I'm like, you know, every time when my older one was in it, I thought this is never going to end, but now I know. I mean, I know, cause I've lived it and I'm like, this is just part of it, you know, whether 100%. It's a toddler or whatever phase of life it is, you know, you just, and that goes for us too.
I saw on a t-shirt once, you know, life is a beautiful struggle. And, you know, I just look at it as like, it's all part of the human experience, you know,
yeah.
And like truly, like even with, you know, and I not to go down this rabbit hole whatsoever, but like even the wars going on in the world, I mean, there's just some things that it just makes me sick to my stomach, even just seeing some of the things that are going on, the amount of gratitude that I have for living where we live, where there isn't conflict going on right now. Like, And by the way, that's been going on forever. If you look at North Korea or like,
I mean,
just fill in
honestly,
the blank.
When aren't there? That's, I mean, like
exactly.
Justin and I were talking about that the other day and I was like, when aren't there? And I just visited Uganda in February and or March, and we can see Congo from there. And some of the rebels had come over and right below where the land is for the pygmies that fight for the forgotten helps them obtain. There's a whole stretch of little communities and they had like slaughtered. The rebels had come over and slaughtered people. I mean, just the week before, that's not in the news. You know, there's things happening in this world all the time. And so I'm just like, yes, it's a cue for us to really be grateful for the peace that we have in our lives right now.
Man. Well, 100%. Yeah. And two things on that. I have a buddy, one of my best friends from Ethiopia, and you know, I've talked to him about, you know, what's going on in Ukraine and the Israel-Palestine situation and or whatever, like whatever you see on like CNN or on our social media feeds. And in no way, shape or form was he taking anything away from that. But he's like, did you know in my home country, like we literally just had a civil war in Ethiopia, hundreds of thousands of people died and you didn't hear a word about it,
right.
Regardless.
Right.
That's a whole other story. But at the end of the day, we have to
have
so much
gratitude. I thought it was millions. Yeah.
It potentially
was. I mean, like, so many people. Yes.
Yeah. And we never hear about those things. But at the end of the day, why I brought up the war is, and look, people have such a hard time with this. This is like trigger warning. You know, we joked about how I'm willing to trigger, but I have no problem saying that there is no light without darkness. Everything is a part of the human experience, right? And even the biggest atrocities. Now, am I saying that I wish for these things to happen? Not even in the slightest. I'm on team human. I just made a post yesterday. I'm on team human. Everyone wants to know what side am I on? I'm on the human side. I want innocent humans to stop dying. Okay.
Me too.
So yes. That's the team I'm on, because people just want to hear what team I'm on so that they can hear that, and then they can make sure it fits their bullshit picture in their head of who they think I'm supposed to be. And if it does fit that picture, then they're validated. If it doesn't fit that picture, they're going to make a stink and they're going to tell me they're disappointed in them, and then they're going to unfollow. And it's like, okay, this isn't an airport. You don't need to acknowledge your departure. Okay. Just like get out of here and unfollow if you want. But my point is like, it's all part of the human experience.
Yeah.
And in a way, not the individual specific situations, but I think at the end of the day, when you really zoom out, and this would be like definitely maybe a realization you'd have in like a plant medicine ceremony or something, it's all fucking beautiful, because without it all, we don't have this human experience.
It's just like your dad. Really, I agree. I did a podcast like a couple years ago, I think, with East Forest Krishna, and we were just talking about God and how God is everything, and that doesn't mean not everything. That means like actually everything. And I was like, serial killers? And he's like, yep. And so, you know, I have this like whole version of God. You need it. You need it all. And so it's a very, you know, different way of looking at it as far as like what we've been taught and religion and all that, you know, good and bad and all that. I mean, it's just too, it's like taking off these labels too of, you know, because everything is relative when you look at it. So, you know, it's removing all these labels and like you just did there and saying it's human. I'm a team human, you know, rather than saying this or that. Because at the end of the day, that's the truth.
Yes, the truth.
In it, right? In it. All right.
And so, look, like, who knows what's really going on? But anyways, go to your segue.
Honestly, who knows? It's like that story. I love that story about, you know, the guy who's, you know, son gets called to war and they're like, too bad. And then he breaks his arm and they're like, oh, he doesn't have to go now. Great. And he's like, maybe.
We'll see.
And then, we'll see. And I mean, it really is a we'll see. And that's where happiness is. When you just sort of go, we'll see. I don't know how this is going to turn out. We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen, you know, tomorrow. And labeling it good or bad makes us feel something, I suppose. Like, But that said, though, we are labeling, you know, winning, but ultimately a part of your winning was you feeling like you're losing, you know, you going through that tough spot. Do you tell your coaching clients that, like, this is part of winning? These hardships?
So, yes, exactly. So look, what is it, an adjective? Again, I didn't graduate high school, so winning is an adjective, right? Or is it a verb?
I think it's a verb, yeah.
So a verb is like an action, something you're taking action
but
on,
But I
right?
am winning. I
so
think it
running
can be used
as opposed
as...
to run. So run is what? Run is an
run
adjective.
Is a verb.
Run is a verb. That's what I thought, because a verb is a... Or no, that's a noun. Okay, run is a verb. I thought running is the adjective, because it's like the action.
It's like an action verb when you put ing on the end. I don't think it's exactly an adjective, but yeah.
Okay. So. I knew all that. I was just testing you.
Good one.
Anyways, no, I, at the risk of, sounding very unintelligent when it comes to the English side of things, look, there's a reason why we put winning, okay, and making it a verb adjective. The reason why we put winning instead of win is because it's about winning. Now, winning doesn't mean that you are, you know, living an extraordinary life and in abundance. So I'll give you an example of someone we have in our coaching program. She came to us and she is just like, she's on the struggle bus. Okay. Like, she's very similar to where I'm at. Like, her energy is extremely low. Things are falling apart. Like, it's, you know, it's really, really tough. And, you know, she's doing all the right things, though. Like, we've helped her simplify some of the things that she needs to do. We've helped her understand what her game-changing shifts are, the biggest levers we can pull to get her on the track, which is going to get her into a better position. She's coming to group calls. She's engaging with the community. She's touching base with her accountability buddy, you know, daily. She's making the update videos in the group. Like she's doing the damn thing, but she still feels like shit. Now, I told her, hey, you're winning. You want to know why? Because you're showing up and you're doing the things. Even if it's the wrong track, you're still experimenting and we're getting feedback and we're shifting and evolving and pivoting. And slowly but surely, we're getting on the right track and we're going to find it because you keep on showing up. And the only way in which you cannot be winning is to quit right now, right? So sometimes people say, oh, I'm not winning because I'm not, like, you know, wiping my ass with dollar bills and, you know, I'm not, like, you know, springing out of bed with energy in the morning. Yeah, that's winning as well too, if internally you feel fulfilled and abundant, not just externally. But just because if you're on the struggle bus, if you're showing up and you're like, I ain't giving up and I'm going to go until I build an extraordinary life and I build abundance and I all the things that I desire, that's winning. Okay. You might have not won. I don't actually even believe there is. I've won.
Yeah.
Maybe
then
in
what?
Certain areas. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, maybe yeah. in certain areas, but that's scary as shit. This is yeah. like,
and you're like, oh fuck, yeah. now I have to maintain this or something.
Exactly. Exactly. Uh-huh. So yeah. So like even Tony Robbins hasn't won. Dr. Joe Dispenza hasn't won, right? These people are, or you mentioned the spiritual dude that came on. These people haven't won. They've won in many areas and they're winning, but they're keeping going. There's a constant and never ending improvement and growth that happens and healing.
Did you know that before, or did you come to that? Did you think when you were in that darker period of your life, did you think that it was going to be some ongoing thing, or were you under sort of a still like a, I don't know, fallacy or viewpoint that, oh, there's an end game?
So I would go in and out of like the scariest thing to me when I was, and people are going to relate to this. If you're listening to this and your life is, you're on the struggle bus. I think the scariest thought is like, am I ever going to get out of this? Right. And I did have a little bit of that. It would creep in, but it was a small percentage. Like it would creep in maybe like 10% of the time, 20%. But I ultimately had this overwhelming just belief. And I wouldn't even say it's a belief. It was faith. I just had faith. Look, you don't have to be positive when you're on the struggle bus and your life is a hot mess. You don't need to be positive. Positive is like faking that you're actually happy, but you need to be optimistic. What does optimism mean? Optimism means just having faith that the future can and will be better if you just keep going, right? So that's really what that's the hill that I stood on, or whatever the phrase is. I just remember thinking like, if I just keep going, it's going to happen. I like what Alex Hormozi says. He says, create unreasonable equations in your life. So for example, the unreasonable equation for me at that point is if I just keep going and keep adjusting and getting feedback and I never give up and I keep being open to learning and, you know, healing and growing and doing all the things, it's unreasonable to assume that after it compounding and me shifting that I won't get to a beautiful place one day. That's an unreasonable equation that you set for yourself. And that's what I did.
How would you define a beautiful place?
So I think there's many, that's a good question. I think there's many ways to define it. I at the end of the day, have four components that I actually would say. So I like to look at as them as like buckets, because it's just an easy analogy. I think there's four buckets that you have to fill. Sorry, I'm going to refrain from saying should or have. I think there's four buckets in my belief that if you have someone who fills those buckets, won't be in a beautiful place, right? I think it's unreasonable to assume that if these buckets are filled, you won't be in a beautiful place. The first one, so I'll say what they are and then we can kind of unpack them. The number one is growth, okay? Number two is peace. And again, we're going to define these. Number three is purpose. And number four is possibilities. So growth, I've never met someone who's winning who isn't growing. Like you said, like there's no I've won, right? Like even Tony Robbins needs to, I can only assume, needs to look at 2024 and say, how am I going to expand? How am I going to grow this year? Right? Because if he doesn't, he's actually the one that says growth equals happiness, right? Like as soon as you stop growing, I think the game's kind of over for you. Number two is peace. Now, I mean inner peace. Now, to clarify, that does not mean you don't feel negative emotions. Inner peace actually means you have the ability to regulate your emotions, okay? So you still feel sad and depressed, and that's a human experience that you actually want and need to experience, but you can regulate them. So they're not there in a unhealthy or toxic amount. They're there in a human amount when they're supposed to be there, right? So that's inner peace, regulating your emotions. The third one is purpose. I've never met anyone who is winning who doesn't have an immense amount of meaning and purpose in their life and fulfillment and a a belief of they're in alignment with, or the feeling, I should say, that they're in alignment with what they were put on this earth to do. And people ask me like, oh, well, I haven't found my purpose. What is purpose? I think what it is I, in my belief, it's to find your gift. And then the purpose of life is to give it away. Okay. Be of service with that gift. I think that's at least a very reasonable strategy for going out and being in alignment with your purpose. And then the last one is possibilities. So, you know, and speaking of these war-torn countries, you know, like possibilities is a bucket that I think that the more, I'm not saying it's 100% necessary, because we know Viktor Frankl's story, Man's Search for Meaning, one of the best personal growth books of all time, in my opinion. He was in Auschwitz, a concentration camp. And he still was able to find meaning, right, in that concentration camp. But I would say that I bet you, if you asked him, you know, in that moment, would you want to fill your possibilities buckets? Yeah, I would say that he would want to fill the possibilities buckets. What does possibilities mean? It just means options. It means, can I move if I want to? Can I, if someone close to me gets sick, can I get them the best healthcare and the best kind of doctor they need to see, or procedure, or whatever it is? Do I have the ability to have control over my time and my day, or am I just punching in and punching out, even though I don't want to do it, and going to a job that I hate? Like, that's possibilities. So I think that those are just the buckets. I know you asked about a beautiful place. I would say that that's the definition of winning, or not the definition. Those are the buckets that we want to fill if we want to get to a winning place. And the more we have them filled, I would say the more you're going to really feel that you are winning and in a beautiful place.
Yeah. And the possibilities part kind of goes with the optimism that you were talking about earlier, you know, just that sense of like Viktor Frankl, just that sense of meaning, that sense of there are other things out there. Like, and sometimes that, I think that's such a good part of some of the things we see on social media and stuff. You know, you get like, oh, sometimes I think, maybe I'm just being shown this to be shown the possibilities, you know, what is possible. And so that takes comparison out of it for me and just shifts it into, ah, okay, thanks. Thanks for showing me this, because, you know, here I was wondering what's possible. And now, you know, you get shown some possibilities. That's been a nice comparison reframe for me too, instead of like, ah, I'm not bringing up that I'm not good enough. You can shift it into a possibility really easily.
That's a good little shift in perspective.
It took doing it. It took some experience to get there, but yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Did you know that according to a study, 87% of women who have hair extensions lie about having them? And almost 2/3 of women have done some kind of hair extension at some point. So if you do the math, it's a lot. This show is all about letting go of judgments. So if you don't want to tell, I'm not going to judge you. And if you want to know the best secret for hair extensions anywhere around, it's right here in Austin, Texas at The Collective ATX. They have the most natural, lightweight, comfortable hair on the market, and they specialize in no damage to your natural hair like traditional hair extension methods, which I've tried them all. And I didn't even know that your hair is automatically damaged if the extensions are placed anywhere below your ears. Crazy, right? My hair is actually growing in and getting healthier now too. Plus, they keep all their extensions in-house, meaning that you don't have to wait at all. Not to mention color. I'm so picky, I did it myself for years because no one can get it right until now. They were named a top 200 salon by Salon Today in 2023. They've changed my hair journey. Let them change yours. The Collective ATX. Link is in the show notes. Tell them I sent you. Hair extensions, Gypsy. Tipsy does not.
I want to get a little bit practical with you too about what this looks like for you, and you know, what were some of the first practices that helped you and that you advise clients to, and what are some of your non-negotiables every single day?
Yeah, I really like this question. First off, I love practicality, actionable takeaways, you know, like because look, I'll say this. It's my belief that we have a lot of and no judgment or shame. I was there for a long time, and I would even say you could still argue I'm one of these, but I think we have a lot of overeducated underachievers in the world. I think we put so much weight into listening to the podcast, going to the event, reading the book, watching the TED Talk, watching the influencer on Instagram that's teaching you how to live a better life. But it's like, at the end of the day, those ideas and the things you're consciously educating yourself on are only as valuable as you implement and execute them, right? So I think that if anything, I'd rather be an undereducated overachiever, to be honest, if I have to choose one. So,
yeah, drink your water, go for a walk, and you know.
Exactly. Like honestly, like, you know how many people are really struggling, and I was one of them, who like are really struggling, and they are so educated on nutrition, the nervous system, because they've read all the books. And I'm like, okay, but what are you doing, right? And here's why we love to read and watch the TED Talks. And Amy, I hate to like test you on this, but just to make this fun, do you know why people really take are prone to over-educating themselves but underachieving?
I don't know, maybe it's an escape or a coping mechanism too.
It's easier, vulnerable. Like, think about it. Like, when you read, you can actually live under the fallacy that you're actually improving without actually having to do the risk. It's showing up that is the risk, right?
Yeah.
Right? Like, so you got to pick up the phone to make the sales call if you like want to make more money. Well, or you could read the sales book. When you read the sales book, all you're doing is you're like, ooh, that's a good one. Oh yeah, I'm going to write that one down. Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm getting somewhere. But you're not facing the rejection, criticism, judgment, abandonment, and shame that could happen when you pick up that phone call. So just what I would say, two things. Number one, you have to stop reading. Stop listening to this podcast right now. No, I'm just joking.
Oh, do it right when we end, okay?
Right when we end. No more podcasts unless it's either mine or Amy's.
That's right. I'll put a link in the show notes. Okay.
Exactly. But less educating, more doing. But here's the thing that we really help people with. So I think why a lot of people fail is because they try to do everything. They're like, okay, I got to turn my life around. I'm ready to go. It's January 1st. Let's do it. And they're like, I'm going to do the keto diet. I'm going to go to the gym every day for an hour. I'm going to do breath work and meditation and cold baths and saunas and, you know, like
it's a 3-hour morning routine. Yeah,
exactly. And the subconscious mind hates the unfamiliar. It will actually, it'll love a familiar hell way more than an unfamiliar heaven, right? So it'll be prone to actually reverting back, which is called self-sabotage. It'll revert back to those comfortable programs. So look, simplicity. And here's how we do it. We look at what is the biggest lever you can pull in your life that will make every other aspect of your life fall more easily into place if you shift it. So we call it a game-changing shift. So in 2024, it's coming up. Look at, actually, fuck 2024. Tomorrow or next week.
Now.
Right? You don't need to wait. Yeah, now. What is the biggest lever that you can pull? What's the biggest shift you can make? Just one thing, not 10 different things. What is the one thing, the biggest thing you can either take away or add in, a shift in perspective, a tool, a modality, whatever it is, what is a difficult conversation? What is the one thing that when you shift it will make every other aspect of your life fall more easily into place? That's called simplicity. And then once you rock that, then you do the next thing. Because here's the thing, our psychology gets so overwhelmed when we look at all the things we need to do. And we can do it for a little bit through willpower, but we know through data that that actually fatigues like a muscle. Willpower fatigues like a muscle. So just pick the one thing. It's easily digestible to your psychology, right? And you can do this on a micro scale too. So for example, I try and do cold therapy as much as I can. It's really hard. The fucking cold therapy is hard. And especially if it's really cold. What I do when I don't feel like going in, because I try and go about 5 minutes or so. When I don't feel like going in in the morning, I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to get in there for 30 seconds. Okay. Because I know I can do 30 seconds and I don't think about the 5 minutes. I don't think about every day I got to, it's just like, I got to do it for 30 seconds. And what ends up happening is that's more digestible for my psychology. And I'm like, yeah, I can do 30 seconds, whatever, get in, get out. But what ends up happening is I get in there and guess what happens at about 20 seconds is I start realizing like, yeah,
I can do a minute.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go a minute. Yeah. Okay. Next thing you know, I'm, you know, 5 minutes in.
Yeah. So, what are some of those for some of your clients, like, and some of the people that you've worked with in the past? What have been some other
game-changing,
like, really
shifts?
Simple? Yeah. Cause if somebody doesn't have a, you know, access to a cold plunge or something like that.
Well, a cold shower, right? You can do a cold mm-hmm. shower. You could True. Fill your bathtub and put ice in it, right? So now mm-hmm. that's, by the way, it's not often that cold therapy is a game-changing shift. For some people, it might be, but. You know,
I think maybe when you've implemented enough of them, maybe like you're at a more advanced state, like you're like, okay, that's, you know, I know that's going to make a difference. I mean, I see my partner do it for recovery every single day. So yeah,
exactly. Right. So, mm-hmm. but a game changing shift, like I'll give an example, like a game changing shift, could be, I mean, let's just go with, a pretty standard one. It could be to quit drinking. Now, look, if you're a full-blown alcoholic, you know, you can't go from 0 to 100, but you know, someone who just like I've been there where I know alcohol is a game changer shift. I'm just doing too much of it. I'm using it as a coping mechanism. I'm drinking mm-hmm. a little bit during the week, the weekends I'm binging. So what happens when you remove the alcohol and you commit to like, okay, next week I'm doing a reset. I'm doing 60 days, no booze, or 30 days, no booze, whatever. That can be a game-changing shift because all of a sudden you remove the booze. So you're getting to sleep, you're getting better quality sleep, which means you can wake up earlier, which means you're more refreshed, you're in a better mood, you're more likely to get to the gym in the morning. And then you go to the gym and now you're feeling really good because now all of a sudden you were able to get to the gym and have a good sleep and you're in a better mood. So you have better relationships. You finally work up the courage to have that difficult conversation with your boss that you've been needing to have forever, with your spouse. Now all of a sudden you eat cleaner because we know that when like you ditch booze, you're more likely to like have the inhibition to not eat unhealthy. Like you see all these, it's a chain reaction, but
domino effect
mm-hmm. for some people, not saying it's for everyone, but for some people that could be the game changing shift. And then it's like, damn, just removing that one thing changed the fucking game for me. Now what's the next thing? Maybe revisit it after 30 days, 60 days. We have a whole program for that. But then what's the next thing? And it's all mm-hmm. about pulling those big levers. It's actually what investors do when they invest in a business and they're an advisor. They look at the company and they're like, hey, what's the biggest lever we can pull to get us closer to where we need to be in the next 12 months? And then every conversation they have with that entrepreneur, they're like, I don't want to hear anything except for that biggest lever that we are talking about, right?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Do you have one coming up? Do you do that? Do you every day kind of look at like what do you assess for that?
Yeah, I'm probably assessed too much.
Okay, maybe then you're like, my biggest lever is just relax a little bit.
It could be. And that's the thing is some people think like, oh, like, so I got to go to the gym. It's like, no, it could be meditation every day. It could be, you know, saying no to just something or like, you know, setting boundaries. It could be literally whatever is going to serve you, whatever the truth really is. You're exploring the truth. Yeah. I think, look, for me, in 2024, I actually have quite a bit of things I want to accomplish in 2024. You know, interestingly for me, I actually think my biggest game-changing shift is getting more strategic about my day. And you know, I've been experimenting. You know how like everyone tries to have that perfect morning routine and the perfect day, the perfect work routine, the perfect schedule, the nighttime routine that's the perfect routine. I feel like I have been experimenting with that for so many years. And I know that this sounds strange that after experimenting for like, I don't know, at least a decade, I finally feel like I know what that kind of ideal day is. It would take us a long time to actually break it down. And actually I'm putting out a How to Wake Up and Win a Day in the Life with Kaler. We're launching that soon, which goes over my entire day.
Great.
We don't have the link for that yet because we're still working on the domain, but it'll be out soon. Just watch my social media. We'll be talking a lot about it. But yeah, the perfect day in terms of, Just mostly my schedule. And I think I have the modalities and everything down, like my diet and my workouts and my meditation, like all of that is fine. It's my work routine and everything. It just needs more structure and more organization, quite honestly, and more consistency. You know, I work a lot, but it's very kind of just not disorganized is probably a hyperbolic, but it's just not as streamlined or efficient as I would like it to be.
Sure. Well, good luck. I think that's exciting. Good luck. I mean, I say good luck because,
as in like, you don't believe, well, good luck.
No, I do. I just, in my experience, sometimes life has a way of throwing a wrench in those plans, you learn yeah. something you never expected to learn. So like, yeah, I'm all for it. And sometimes then we have to become strategic in a whole new way that we didn't even expect. And you're like, oh, interesting, you know? So totally. Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
different for everyone, right? Like it's totally. Interesting. I think that kind of speaks to, you know, how far I've come, because man, if that's my game changing shift, I mean, that's a champagne problem to have.
What
about yours? What's yours? What would you say your game changing shift is?
I want to optimize my body in my 50s, and I've been off my game on that. And I really just realized some things that were habits that I was doing unconsciously. And so I was like, oh, and I caught myself in the moment, and I'm giving myself grace around it, because I'm like, it took me to get to now. It took me moving into this new house. It took me feeling this way in my relationship. It just takes time sometimes. And that's okay. You know, I'd love to be able to jump to where I want to be, but sometimes that's just not the way it goes. It takes time. So I now feel like, oh, now I'm really in a position to optimize my body. And I have before, but due to a series of life events and coping mechanisms, I got out of my practices. And so I want to get back into those practices and take control of that in a way, and really set an example for what a woman can look like in her 50s and what our bodies can do. So I'm excited yes. about that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I love that. And I actually have on my, because I analyze a lot, and I've already been thinking for like a couple months, what is my 2024? Like, again, I'm not waiting to start. I've actually started some things already. I don't like to wait until a new year, but I do like to zoom out and be like, hey, what's the focus this year? And in 2024, I'm getting in the best shape of my life. And I'm in pretty good shape. I've been in really good shape at points of my life. I want to, I'm mid 30s. So for me, I want to get in the best shape I've ever gotten into in my life. So I don't know. That's
yeah. I really do too. And it's going to look a little bit different for me than it did, but I was drinking before too. And so now that I am alcohol free, at least at this point, I'm 18 months everything free at the moment. So I'm like excited to see what that's like. And my body is not, you know, like it was when I was in my mid 30s, but meaning like just my knees and shit like that. But, yeah. But so what, you know, like I know I can lift weights. I know what I enjoy, and I know like what I can do. So yeah, I'm with you on that. Like I'm excited to just really, I don't know, just see what it's like and see how I feel.
Yeah. A lot of people you're asking about, like our clients, and I want to be careful in saying this is not everyone. Okay. Like there are some people that like, there's deep seated stuff going on, but like, and I don't know, I would say, especially for men. Okay. I would say that, and it doesn't mean only men, but often when someone comes to us and they say they're really struggling, like they're super tired and, well, mm-hmm. fat, sick, tired, weak, and broke. We talked about that. Often the game-changing shift is you could really just say, hey, go get in the best shape of your life yeah. and then tell me that you still feel the same way. Like, you know what I mean? And look, the beautiful thing about it,
yeah,
who doesn't know how to get in way better shape? I think everyone nowadays knows how to. I mean, yeah, we can get complex about the strategies, but just – like eat cleaner foods that have one ingredient in it, stop drinking so much, right? Get better sleep, move your body every day. It doesn't
walk?
Even have to be in the gym.
Like you
walk.
Can literally walk. Like during the pandemic, I started walking and I was like, I got in really good shape. I was lifting weights too, but not near as much. And I was like, huh. Here I was thinking I had to run all those years. And I'm like, you know, yeah. Yeah, so we overcomplicate it. It's like that. It's like that state of reading that you were saying. We don't get out and do it. We overcomplicate it and we think about it. And we think, what do I need to do? Do I need to do this? Do I need to sign up for this? Do I need to get, you know, an account with this person?
And it's the low hanging fruit. Like, you know how many people come to us? And again, I was one of them. No judgment or shame, but they're just like, they basically say I'm depressed and anxious and I don't know why. And I have no energy and I don't know why. And it's like, I just ask them all about the low hanging fruit. Like, do you sleep well? No. Do you drink alcohol? Yeah. Do you eat processed foods? Yeah. You know, like, do you get out into nature? Not enough, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, guys, you're not giving yourself a fighting chance. It's almost like, hey, just go out and do all the basic shit and then come back to us. Right. And then we'll get to like maybe the more deep-seated stuff. But again, it's actually the implementation and the execution that's the most difficult. People know what they need to do. They don't understand why they're not doing it. And that is a whole other story. But I think we add community, we add accountability, we add support, guidance, education, and then we hold space. And we actually facilitate the journey for you to go on. And we give you like a boost. It's like rocket fuel. It's like the plane taking off, right? And what we do is, I think challenges are really great. And we actually even have a more masculine energetic challenge. So we call it the hustle. And then we have a more feminine approach to the challenge, which is called the flow. And then we have a hybrid. So depending on where someone's at in their life, what season they're in, you know, male and female, like whatever they feel is going to resonate with their life, they can do either a hustle, a flow, or a hybrid, but it's a challenge. It's got structure. It's got like, you know, it's got some rules, and then you get held accountable and you come to group calls, and like, it just gets you really off the ground and building your foundation. Right.
That's such an important distinction too. It's like, I know all the things to do. Like, how many people feel like that? I know all the things to do. I've listened to the podcast. I've done that. Why am I not doing it? So getting to that root of like why I'm not doing it, and then figuring out just some simple ways, like find a community, and then you actually start to implement these things in your life. Such a great point 100%. To get to. Is there anything today that we didn't get to that you really wanted to talk about, or anything that you want to reiterate?
I mean, we could do Joe Rogan style episode here. We could talk for 4 hours.
But, I know. but you know what? Justin and I are going to make it up there and visit you in the Palm Springs of Canada at one of these points for sure. So we can continue. Because, you know, so before we had any conversation, you know, I think maybe your team had reached out to me, something like that. So I went and looked at your social media and all that. And I never would have guessed from looking at that we are so in agreement on so many things. You know, I think that it's a good thing to point out that what you see is not always what we're perceiving. How do I want to say this? I want to say it's important to keep an open mind because we don't know. And you are such a nice, curious, you know, interested person. And so, and ready to have the conversation. And I think that that's just really cool. And I feel like I am so glad that I didn't subscribe to some sort of judgment and say, this person, you know, believes X or whatever I'm perceiving. Instead, I was like, what are we going to talk about? You know, and we end up having these really interesting conversations and realizing that we're actually both just in this growth mindset. That is a really beautiful space to be in. So thanks. Yeah,
I appreciate that. And I think that at the end of the day, social media is really something that's very easy to take out of context because you're looking at like these short clips of like, you know, there's so many times where, you know, my team takes a clip from the podcast and I watch it because it gets posted and I'm like, oh, people are going to take that out of context because they didn't hear the full, like, you know, clip, and they didn't, you know, and then right after the clip ends, I said this, and like, it's just so easy to take things out of context and to jump to those conclusions. And yeah. And I think, look, the other thing too is it's the cancel culture versus curious culture. It's like, you know, I commend you because so many people, if they saw something, because look, I know I'm not everyone's cup of tea in terms of my beliefs and what I, my opinions and everything. But I think what I really appreciate is when people don't necessarily agree with what I'm saying, but they don't write me off. And if anything, they actually get excited about a conversation that they get to have with someone who doesn't validate their internal beliefs. It's going to be an exploration of truth. And that's a beautiful thing.
I agree. But in addition to that, you really walk the walk of that. And you aren't, you know, coming at it and this is the right thing kind of a way, you know, you're actually really open and listening. And that's so wonderful. So anyway, I mean, I just really appreciate it. So
no, I thank you. But I, you know, it's just like, man, it's also a testament to where we're at in this world, because if that is rare, you're right. But it shouldn't be. I mean, that
shouldn't be
like a very basic, like fundamental thing, right?
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, anything you want to say before we go? And I want to sum up. No. Good.
No.
I feel like we're at a good ending spot. And yeah, and thank you so much for being on the show. I'm so happy that we got to continue the conversation. If anyone hasn't listened to me on your podcast, it's episode 266. And I'll put a link in the show notes to that too, because since you're going to be taking action right away, you know, after you've listened to this one and that one. Kaylor, how can everyone find you? Please share all your links, and they will also be in the show notes.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you resonated with the stuff that I said today, I would say just go to my Instagram, the Kaylor Betts, and that's Taylor with a K, and the Betts with two T's, B-E-T-T-S. Yeah, check out, it'll be in the show notes, I'm sure. Check out my Instagram, check out the Awaken Winning podcast if you want. If you really resonated with, like, all the stuff about, like, turning your life around, essentially, and being on the struggle bus, you can go to theawlife.com. So the awlife.com. And then we have more information. You can get on a call with my team to see if this might be everything that you've been waiting for.
That's awesome. And again, it'll be all in the show notes. And so thank you so much for taking time to have this conversation. I really loved everything about it. So very, very enjoyable. And I hope everyone will follow you and check out all your links. And thank you so much for being here, because again, when you show up for these conversations, you're showing up for your life, and you are showing up in a state of expansion. You're ready. So go do that simple thing, whatever that lever is, go pull it. And you got the keys, you know it. So till next time. Boom.
Boom.
We're done.
This has been the Amy Edwards Show from Overcome Studios. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe. And thank you so much for being here. Sign up for our newsletter at amyedwards.com.